Hello, everyone, and welcome to the CSFL Hub podcast. I am your host, Kyle, and today I am joined by a very special guest. You have read many of his articles on the CSFL Hub website before, and this is Cole Jacobson. He is a contributor at CSFL Hub. Cole reached out to me, you know, almost immediately when I got the Hub started, and he's been on the team ever since. So welcome, you know, Cole to the podcast. How you doing, Cole?
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be on
here. Yeah, no problem. And thank you again. You know, I thank you all the time, but thank you, you know, for being a contributor. Thank you for reaching out. And, you know, you are one of the best writers I've ever had the privilege of working with. So it's, you know, great getting to work with you and finally getting the chance to chat with you. So, you know, tell everybody, you know, a little bit about yourself, Cole, what you do, what you've been doing, what you got going on, and, you know, your origins at Penn.
Yeah, definitely. So my connection to Sprint football is that I played at Penn as a defensive lineman. I walked on as a sophomore, so I played my latter three seasons there, 2016 through 2018. And that was an awesome experience for sure. You know, coming out of high school, like most of my former teammates, I thought I was done with football at that time, and I was learning to be content with that. But once I got to Penn, because I'm from the West Coast, I never heard of Sprint before getting to college. But once I got to Penn and saw this opportunity, I really jumped right at it, and it was an absolute blessing. In particular, my sophomore season, I was part of the Mike McCurdy-led 2016 championship team, so that was absolutely outrageous. I still got the ring sitting right across from me on this desk here.
I bet. Dope.
And overall, Sprint was an awesome experience. And so once I saw Kyle starting this website, I decided I'd jump right in and help him out. I thought it was a great idea. You know, obviously, it's not for any money, not really for, like, you know, long-term career prospects. It's more of a side hustle just to help get more exposure to the league, because I thought the league could use a real media outlet, so I wanted to help out whoever I could. Then beyond that, in terms of more formal work setting, I now work as a researcher for the NFL Network out in Los Angeles. And the basic summary of that is that I help feed information to our on-air anchors and reporters so they know what to say. You know, they look smart on the air, that sort of material. And that's only what I do during football seasons. And then outside of that, I help out at UCLA football as a volunteer recruiting assistant in the summer times. I did that both 2019 and then this past summer, 2021. So ultimately, yeah, football's a big part of my life, both as a player in the old days and now in a work setting. So always down to talk ball and, you know, explore the future of the league.
Dope, man. Yeah, again, thanks for joining me. Thanks for having you on. Excuse me. I know we had to do a little coordination because, like you said, you're out on the West Coast. I'm still here, you know, Philadelphia. So we had to get the time difference, you know, to get linked up. But we got it done for you guys so we could talk some ball. But, yeah, so let's just dive right into it. So, you know, we recently posted an article, you know, some things we were excited for this upcoming 2021 season. You know, the league will be getting kicked off in just about 2 weeks' time. So what are some of the things, you know, you can reference some of the things you wrote in that article, or just riff off the top of your head, but what are some things you're looking forward to this upcoming season, Cole?
Yeah, I'll start off with what I discussed in that article. You know, like I said in the story, I have some particular bias in terms of why I'd be interested in Penn, but I do think Penn is in a real interesting transition period right now. Obviously, the biggest thing is that the Wags era is finally done after 50 straight years of being a head coach, which is...
That's huge. That'll never be done again.
No matter how many times you say it, that number is still outright ridiculous.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so it seems everything about the program's new. They have a new HC now, Jerry McConnell, and also a new OC as a result of the, you know, trickle-down effect of him moving up. And it's also on the field, you know, tons of personnel changing with Eddie Jenkins and his group of guys in the class of 20 and class of 2021 now gone. So the roster will look a lot different than it did, you know, two seasons ago when they were killing it on offense, setting all kinds of rushing records. And yeah, and like I said in the story, a bunch of off-the-field changes too. You know, new dean of admissions, because the former dean was a former Penn Sprint football player who hopefully helped our guys get in, you know, here and there. So who knows if that will make a big impact. New AD as well, because the prior AD, Grace Calhoun, left for Brown. So there's a lot changing for the Penn program, and it's going to be good to see, you know, how it will impact the team, you know, whether good or bad in years to come. And also another thing I wrote in the story was about Caldwell's move to the North Division, which I think is a major, major improvement for the league as a whole. I think we both have seen firsthand, you know, in the prior three seasons of the two-division format, 2017 through 2019, Army just had a total cakewalk to the division title every year. I mean, Cornell and Mansfield were probably their biggest threats, and neither one of them really ever held a candle to Army. So now to see another really strong rising program in Caldwell, you know, a team that was only founded in 2017 but has been improving every year to the point that, you know, this past season, the past full season of 2019, they were hanging with, you know, everybody in the South Division, Navy, Penn, Chestnut Hill, giving them real competitive games. And to have another team of that caliber moving to the North is going to be so much better for the league's competitive balance that it's going to be even if it doesn't make an impact this year right away, and I still think Army is going to win that division this year, probably pretty easily. I think that's a major, major help for the league's future and avoiding that north-south imbalance that we've seen in the past.
Yeah, I'd agree with you. You know, to tackle that point you just made about, you know, the move of Caldwell, I definitely agree. It's definitely going to create more parity, I think is the word I'd be looking for in terms of, like you said, just a competitive balance in terms of, you know, not having one conference be so overwhelmingly powerful over the other one. You know, one thing in the South that we definitely saw, like you said, in the last couple seasons was that, you know, top of the league, you know, Penn, Navy, Chestnut Hill, they were just beating up on each other, essentially, you know. So by the time you were getting to that championship game, you know, which Navy did make it to the previous two seasons, you know, they were battle-tested, yes. You know, they definitely were battle-tested, but they were, you know, beat up. You know, I'm sure you're at Chestnut Hill, you know, our senior year, you know, I was fucking beat up. You know, just having to go game after game, you know, 4 or 5 game stretch with just high level play like that, you know, it's a check and a balance, you know, it's a gift and a curse. You know, you hope every game is that competitive. You know, that, but, you know, that's just not the reality of football and peewee and high school and any division or in the NFL. You know, you have your teams at the top of the balance. You have your teams at the bottom of the balance. But, you know, with a more competitive, you know, team going to the north, like you said, I think you hit the nail on the head. It'll just create more parity in the league. So, you know, as the years go on and the years move forward, as, you know, some of the Division II teams, you know, get stronger, you know, make more of a name for themselves in recruiting. And kids are more inclined to go there. I think, you know, we'll be reaping the benefits of it as fans, you know, now, you know, being fans, but also as alumni, you know, we're still very close to the league. We'll be reaping the benefits of it, you know, 5, 6, 7 years from now, you know, as the teams, you know, continue to be more competitive, like you mentioned. And then to your first point with Penn, you know, I definitely agree with you in terms of like the level of excitement for some of those changes that you got going on, particularly on the field. Like you said, you know, I don't think there'll ever be another era as impactful as, you know, Coach Wags's era, you know, 50 years out, you know, Coach West up at Army, I think he's, you know, maybe 15, 20 odd some years in, but to get 50, that's a big fucking deal. And I don't think another coach will ever get that. And, you know, I'm sure you could go on for hours about the impact he's had on your life as a young man, as a football player, as I'm sure, you know, all of the teammates before you and teammates after you could go on as well. But then with the on-the-field changes in terms of the players, you know, one of the things that I'm definitely looking forward to is, you know, seeing how that quarterback situation gets itself figured out. I think I've mentioned this to you before, and I've said it on the podcast. I don't think there'll ever be a 3-quarterback stretch like Todd Bolser to Mike McCurdy to Eddie Jenkins. I know there was like a 1 or 2 year buffer between Todd and Mike, but I'm just considering it like a bing, bang, boom situation. I don't know if there'll ever be another 3-quarterback stretch like that. Like, that's absolutely crazy to have 3 MVP candidates back to back to back, 3 guys who are all top 10 in passing, you know, every major statistical category you would use to evaluate a quarterback, and wins, all-time passing yards, all-time passing touchdowns, rushing yards, rushing touchdowns, you know, big games, points scored, all of those metrics you would use. I don't think in the league's history there will never be another 3-quarterback stretch like that. So I personally am interested to see, you know, who fills those shoes, you know, whether it's a new guy coming in, whether it's one of the, you know, now juniors or now seniors who are on the roster already. You know, ultimately they may be talented and they may have, you know, what it takes to, you know, lead a successful program. But those are incredibly big shoes to fill, especially, you know, Eddie leaving the way he left. One of the most, you know, statistically impactful seasons from a quarterback perspective in league's history, you know, culminating with the MVP, which was well-deserved. So I'm looking forward to seeing specifically the quarterback situation. Do you have any other specific skill group situations you're looking at, or is the quarterback situation you think the biggest question mark they got to solve?
Don't think QB is the biggest question mark for them. You know, I think you talked about that 3-QB stretch with Buzzler, McCurdy, Jenkins, and that's a pretty absurd group for sure. To see a trio like that might never happen again, but I think the stretch really might not be over. I think the upcoming starter should be a rising junior named Andrew Paolini. I think he's really the real deal. I mean, I think he didn't have to throw any passes in his freshman year 2019 because, you know, they were killing everybody by the time he would get in the game. But I mean, I saw even brief exposure to him in the 2019 alumni game, because obviously that's kind of setting where you're not going to play your starter the whole time, so he actually has to sling the rock a bit in that game, and he can play for sure. And he's much more the Jenkins mold than the McCurdy mold, in the sense that he's definitely more of a runner. Like, he doesn't have the cannon that McCurdy does. I think nobody in the history of this league really does have that. but he's definitely an Eddie-style quarterback where he wants to run those his reads, keep the ball, and just keep the defense on your toes. And we all know how dangerous QB runs are because it gives you an extra blocker when the running back doesn't have the ball. So I think he's going to be a real, real good player. He's definitely an accomplished high school QB before he got here. And similar to how Eddie sort of had to have his year waiting behind Mike before he emerged, I think that was tailing his year in 2019 to sit, be the scouting guy, you know, see how the program's operated. Now I think he's going to be a stud for them.
Tough.
I do think their biggest concern is going to be the offensive line. I think they graduated 4 or 5 starters from the 2019 group, you know, two of them being class of 2020 guys, and Herman and Matt McDermott, and then two of the 2021 guys who were robbed of their senior year, Jack Scheibel and Dan Smith. So I think just having that much turnover, you know, only one returning offensive lineman who started a game in college, I think that's what's going to be tough for them. I do think that their new offensive line coach, Frank McConnell, son of head coach Jerry McConnell, I think he's a huge help with the program, and I've heard only positive things about him. But at the end of the day, no matter how well coached you are, no matter how hard you work, you know, it's tough to lose, you know, 4 players of that caliber and regroup. So
yeah, of course.
See how that goes for them.
Yeah, no, that's definitely a testament to, you know, the type of program, you know, that Penn has in terms of, you know, being able to refresh instead of rebuild, might be the phrase there. But yeah, like you said, you know, having a no matter the level of ball, you know, football is played from the trenches building out. So, you know, if you don't have an offensive line, if you don't have a defensive line, then it's going to be a problem for you, you know, no matter where you're playing or what you're playing. So, yeah, no, I could definitely understand that in terms of it's hard losing, you know, 4 starters up front. You know, I had spoken to Matt, you know, you actually connected me with Matt, you know, about 2 years ago now. Matt Herman, starting center there. He was a great guy. He was a great center. Actually, you know, that's the last group of guys. We're coming up on like the last graduating class of guys that we would have actually played with and against, which is another thing that I'm actually excited to see. So now to see some of the players who were freshmen, you know, when I was a senior, or maybe it was their first year in the league when I was, you know, me and you were seniors, seeing them, you know, now have their time to shine, have their time to dominate is something I'm definitely looking forward to. But to come full circle back to your original point, yeah, I think definitely losing some offensive linemen is going to be big in terms of, you know, what your production on this season is going to be. I think they'll definitely have some ability, you know, to kind of mask that, you know, with the type of running back that, you know, Laquan McKeever is. You know, he may be able to make some things happen. Obviously, you know, the symbiotic relationship of linemen and, you know, the running back, he needs them to block. But if he can make something, you know, happen, if they can only hold their blocks for a few seconds, when you have a type of back like that who can kind of catch lightning in the bottle, you know, give a little shimmy shake at the line of scrimmage and make somebody miss and just get something after that, I think, you know, you guys would definitely still be, you know, all right in every sense of the word. But, yeah, I can definitely understand, you know, the question mark there in terms of offensive linemen. But, you know, that's the beauty of college football. You know, every 4 years you got a new plan. Guys got to step up. You got to have new first-time starters come into the game. You know, after you start that first game, then you're a college starter. You know, you're only not a college starter until you play that first game. Once you're first game in, now you're just rocking your role. But, yeah, no, that's a really good synopsis, you know, what Penn's got going on this upcoming season. Did you have any other, you know, question marks you or excitement you're looking forward to in any other teams this upcoming season?
And, yeah, really, and I know I alluded on this already with the division change, but I really think Caldwell is a team with extreme potential. I know I wrote about it in the most recent CSFL Hub story about how their 2-5 record was very deceptive in 2019. I think they were a much better team than that. You know, obviously they had that one weird forfeit loss where they really won the game. So obviously that's really a win for them. And they also were very competitive against very tough teams and games that they came up just short in. And they did all that with more or less no senior class. I think, if I recall right, there was only one senior on that roster because that was only the program's 3rd year of existence. So
yeah, something like that. Might have been one, might have been two, but it was a very small number.
Right. So to be as competitive as they were with more or less 75% of a full roster is pretty impressive on their behalf. So now this is their first year having 4 real classes of recruited players. They're going to be dangerous because I know you saw firsthand at Chestnut Hill, like the first time when your class was seniors, and that was the first time you guys had 4 recruited classes. That was obviously a year where you guys made a big jump. You were way more competitive against the top teams. You even got us at our field. So I think you know as well as anybody how much it helps to have 4 real classes of recruited players, so that way you can finally compete with the best teams in the league.
Oh, yeah, it makes all the difference in the world. Like you said, you know, being a guy who was, you know, I was on the inaugural team there at Chestnut Hill, you know, stayed there for my 4 years. And just the maturation process of a program in terms of, you know, not only some of the things from your coaching staff, like play calling, situational play calling, things like that, and recruiting, but just, you know, the maturation of, you know, male bodies. You know, despite us playing sprint football, you're still getting bigger, you're still getting stronger, you're still building, you know, quick twitch muscle fibers, you're still, you know, getting improved cardiovascular health, your stamina, things like that, on top of, you know, your skill and, you know, honing your craft, you know, at your specific position. So, yeah, like you said, that fourth year, you know, we had at Chestnut Hill, you know, was our best year until the following year, which I should, you know, Chestnut Hill went 5-2 the year after that. So that laying that foundation and that groundwork and then just seeing the program go is definitely something I know this fourth year of guys at Caldwell is going to be proud of. They even played, you know, in their spring game this past year. I managed to catch that game a little bit. The broadcast was kind of funky, so I was going in and out a little bit. But I did manage to catch, you know, the bulk of the game. You know, they beat Stack in the lone spring game played this year. They won 21-0, and it was pretty much a, you know, pretty dominating win. I actually expected a little bit more out of Stack, but I think it just, you know, goes to show the type of defense that Caldwell was bringing to the table. Caldwell's big thing this year, in my opinion, is going to be their quarterback play. You know, they still don't have a definitive guy. You know, Tajay Irby, you know, has moved on, who was, you know, one of their most electrifying quarterbacks, you know, the previous, you know, last full season and the season before that. Some of their other, you know, key playmakers have graduated and moved on. You know, Armani Bermudez, you know, who was that phenomenal running back in the 2019 season. He actually went on to play Division I football. I believe he's at Indiana State University now. And then Carl Watson, who was their electric receiver, who 2018 season, I think he led the league in receptions, yards, and touchdowns, I believe. He's also moved on from the program. So they definitely, you know, did lose some of their, you know, program staples. But I think, you know, with the showing they did show against Stack, they still have enough there to definitely be highly competitive. They're still, you know, in a recruiting hotspot, you know, on the East Coast. New Jersey just pushes out football players, whether it's, you know, the Shores, whether it's, you know, upstate New Jersey, like right across the river from New York and everything in between. They get guys from all up and down the state of New Jersey. So they're definitely going to have some guys there ready to compete right now. I think their record may end up being something similar to the last time they played. Like you said, they did have the one game that they won, but, you know, I guess not, whatever the case may be. But they'll definitely be still highly, highly competitive, you know, regardless of what they have. I think their defense is definitely their strong point right now compared to their offense. But defensively, I think they'll be able to put a licking on a lot of teams and force teams to really have to go out there and execute at a high, high level. Otherwise, you know, they'll leave the door open for a young offense. And that's not what you want to do. You don't want to give a young offense opportunities like that because eventually they will capitalize. But I agree with you. Caldwell is definitely going to be in for a big season. If not this season, the next upcoming years, I think they're really going to have a pop year. And to just continue that conversation off of that, I actually am looking forward to Alderson Brodus, you know, coming back this year. You know, that was the last new team to come into the league 2019 season. Alderson Brodus is in West Virginia, so they're the farthest team south now. And they had a really, really good year in 2019. And I think, like you said, I think their record was a little bit, you know, misleading. Same deal. They were in a lot of games. They were competing with teams, even though they didn't have, you know, the situational intelligence or the playmaking ability to win the games at the end. They definitely were in a lot of games. Like, they gave Chestnut Hill hell when Chestnut Hill went down there. Caldwell beat them pretty handily, but they gave them a lot of production offensively and gave them some work defensively. Ended up playing Navy at Navy. You know, ultimately they lost, but they had some of their young guys make plays on some of Navy's best players, like Grant Hooper, and some of their best defensive linemen like Troy Monroe. So I saw a lot from Alderson Brodus to be, you know, really, really optimistic about. And I actually think that they were the best first-year team that's been in the league in the last couple of years. I think that first-year team would have beat my Chestnut Hill first-year team. I think their first-year team would have beat Caldwell. I think their first-year team would have beat Stack as well. So I'm really, really high on them. Did you manage to see anything with them? I know they played Penn at Penn, and again, Penn beat them pretty handily, but they still brought a lot of noise, you know. They just didn't have the firepower to beat, you know, Eddie, Laquan, and Brandon. But what are your thoughts on Alderson Brodus?
Yeah, I think they're a really interesting team. For one specific reason is that they're one of the few teams, along with Penn, Army, Navy, and Cornell, that also has an NCAA football program. So, and obviously those other four teams I just mentioned, the two Ivies and the two academies, they've been traditionally among the top of the league for the past, you know, many, many years, like pushing the full past century. So I think just to have that built-in NCAA program just for Aldridge and Brodus to be able to pull some guys down from, you know, if there are guys, you know, that are unhappy with the NCAA's, you know, the coaching staff, or they're just not getting much playing time, and they're kind of smaller guys, you know, think about the impact that someone like Angelo Matos made for the Penn team if they're coming down from the FCS program.
Yeah, he was a defensive end, right? He was a defensive end, right?
He did. So Matos had an interesting career. Actually, he started at guard on the 2016 championship team, but then later moved to the defensive side of the ball. He played DN my senior year.
Yeah, that's where I remember him from. Okay.
Right. So, yeah, both sides of the ball, he was a huge impact player for us. And I mean, for us to get him from the FCS program was such a boost for us. And that was just only one guy. So I think about a program like Allison Brodus, if they can get one or two guys like that per year, that's just a huge influx of talent that can help you build some depth in a situation where, you know, obviously their new program, they don't have four recruited classes yet. That's a built-in way for them to sort of catch up and fill that gap that's otherwise vacated by not having many years of recruits coming in yet. Because I think back to them, I remember I watched the live stream of that game against Penn, and they got killed. Eddie went wild, I think. It was like a 49-7 final. I remember I wanted them to go for two to get 50 for Wags' 50th year, but they decided not to go that route. They got killed because they just didn't have the depth yet. Again, as a team of almost all freshmen the same way, you know.
Yeah, and I think it was entirely freshmen. They had one senior who's now on the coaching staff now.
Right, so it's the same way, you know, Caldwell in 2017 or you guys in 2015 who, like, couldn't really hang with anybody except Post and Princeton. Like, that's just how it is your first year when you don't have, you know, the full stable of recruits. But, yeah, I do think as they build more recruits and, you know, more years coming in, and then also the occasional pull downs from their D2 program, I think they're going to be a dangerous team. Maybe not quite this year, but I think pretty soon they're going to be contending.
Yeah, I think we're about like 3 or 4 years away from the most competitive, you know, the CSFL has ever been, like, in the history of the league. Like you said, you know, by that point, every Division II team will be at least 4 or 5 years in. You know, like you said, some of the mainstays, you know, still going to be here, you know, still doing what they're doing. You know, hopefully by that point, too, you see Cornell make a bit of a resurgence. You know, that's probably one of the other teams that I'm interested in seeing because, you know, the last season that we had in 2019, you know, one of the things that I noticed, you know, just being the type of stat guy I am, looking at metrics, you know, looking at things over the course of a season, the 2019 season for them was historically one of their worst seasons ever. And when you look at it in terms of like some of those key statistics, like third down conversion, you know, opponent third down conversion, points versus points given up, running yards, passing yards, turnovers, things like that, they were almost identical to Princeton's last season in the league in 2015. And, you know, that's something nobody wants to be compared to. You know, I'm sure, you know, those Princeton guys are doing great things now. You know, I'm sure they missed their program. And, you know, we ultimately, you know, we're the last team to play them in a crazy game. But I know nobody wants to be compared to that team because they went through an 11-year stretch without winning a game. And that last season in 2019, almost every major metric you would use to measure team success was almost identical to that 2015 Princeton season. So I know they have to be itching just to get back on the field to show like, hey, that year was just an anomaly. I'm sure that's what they're thinking. You know, they have had some issues in terms of just getting reliable athletes on the field, if you know what I mean. You know, they haven't forced, their star player, who I was really, really high on. He's one of the best players I ever played against in the league, and Will Griffin, who was their running back number four. He was originally a quarterback under Rob Pulanulo, who's maybe their greatest, you know, quarterback in, you know, CSFL Cornell history. And then he transitioned to running back and, you know, did a lot of things, you know, was a scat type of back, did some things out of the backfield. And then that 2019 season, he was also their starting safety. So, you know, it's a testament to an athlete's ability to play both ways. But, you know, once you get to college, it's just the level of skill and the level of impact and hits on the body. You don't want to have to play both ways. Like, you don't want to have to. If you can situationally, sure, great. Like, even, you know, when Brendan Clemens came down from the FCF team at Navy, he just played running back. until the championship game. You would think, you know, being a former All-American corner, they'd let him do both, but it just goes to show, like, you don't want to accumulate that many hits on your body, you know, playing 150 snaps. But they needed Will to do that just because of the lack of talent. Ultimately, I think that helped, you know, contributed to him, unfortunately, his career ending prematurely due to injury. They ended up, you know, playing Army, I think, in the third game, and he was off to a really, really hot start. They were 1-1, and their starting quarterback, you know, unfortunately got hurt over the course of the game, and Will had to go play quarterback. So then that made things even more difficult because now, you know, he's getting the ball every snap. So they just started, you know, nothing wrong. They just started teeing off on him, and, you know, unfortunately, I think he ended up breaking his tibia or, you know, something in his leg just snapped, and that was the end of his, you know, illustrious career. So I think if they would have had some more talent, he maybe wouldn't have had to do so much, which maybe would have resulted in less accumulation of, you know, damage to his body, which may or may not have led to him not getting injured. We'll never know. But I think their lack of talent over the last year or two has been just, you know, a detriment to their program. So I think in terms of player development, we need to see a huge jump from them. In terms of the players that are there now, did they get better? We need to see a little bit of a jump in recruiting, you know, maybe getting one or two of the guys from the Division I team, like you said, like a Rob Pulanulo was a dual sport athlete at Cornell. He was on the Cornell baseball team, you know, and he was originally got recruited to play to the FCS team to play quarterback. So, like you said, some of the other schools have been more successful in getting some of those guys, a Navy, an Army, a Penn. You mentioned your former teammate. Cornell hasn't had as much success pulling from their FCS program, so maybe we need to see a jump in that. Otherwise, we may see, you know, the downfall of one of the, you know, mainstays in the league. What do you think?
Yeah, they're an interesting team. Obviously, they've had tons of historical success, but I do think their built-in challenge is, yeah, just being able to recruit at a high level. I mean, we all know, like, recruiting in spring football is hard enough in a nutshell because nobody knows what this is. Like, you know what I mean? And then, so that's true for any school, but they have the built-in issue of, A, it's crazy academic standards. See them similar to Penn. It's just because it's so hard to get kids into the school-wise, that just limits your pool of recruits even further. But then what makes them even have a bigger challenge than Penn is that, you know, Ithaca, general upstate New York, that is not a hotbed for high school talent at all.
Yeah, not at all.
Or at least Penn has tough academic requirements, but at least Philadelphia is an area that has some great high school talent. You know, we talk about all those schools, St. Joe's Prep, Malvern, LaSalle, Archbishop Wood, you know, some great football schools in that area. Not to mention, you know, South Jersey, also another great football area.
South Jersey, didn't Eddie come from Pittsburgh?
Right, Eddie himself was from Pittsburgh.
Yeah, so there, just getting PA in general.
Just PA in general. Yeah, the whole PA, you know, New Jersey area has some great high school talent, which upstate New York doesn't have the same access to. So because of that, I think Cornell's ceiling is very limited. I just don't think they're going to be able to get good enough players to really be competing for championships anytime soon. But simultaneously, I think 2019 was their absolute floor. I think that was just a disaster-type case where they, first off, had graduated a pretty good class the prior year. You know, Ostrander, Panhands, those guys that we played against my senior year.
Yeah,
they
went,
I think they were 5-2 that year, actually, because they upset you guys in that crazy game.
Yeah, I think us, you, and them all ended with a tie in terms of, like, record. Like, I think we all had the same record at the end of the year.
You guys beat us, we beat Cornell.
I think that's what it was. We beat y'all beat right. Them, they beat us.
that was a solid team for Cornell that year. I think they had 5-2 or so, something like that. But yeah, I think 2019 was an absolute aberration. I think they graduated some good players from that 2018 team, and they also had some injuries. You mentioned, you know, like Griffin, and then the QB's name was like Anish something, or I forget.
Anish Agarwal, yeah, he got hurt in that Army game, and then that just, you know, forced Will to play quarterback.
See, I think 2019 was a disaster. I think they're still too well coached to have a year like that again. There's, you know, in trying to defend them, as you know how it is, they're just, even if they're not that athletic, they always keep you on your toes. They just have tons of RPOs, tons of great, you know, counter plays with a pulling guard or pulling guard and tackle, you know, a lot of is read, outside zone read. Like, they truly have a modern college football offense, and they're tough to defend even when your players are better athletically than theirs are. So I think because of that, they should still be in the middle of the pack of the league, even if their athletes don't allow them to be a true title contender anytime soon.
Yeah, no, I could definitely see that, and I definitely agree with you in terms of like, yeah, they're definitely hard to defend, even when they don't have, you know, the personnel to, like you said, maybe compete. Maybe not even some of the high school acclaim in terms of guys, you know, who are, you know, all Catholic, all suburb, all county, all shore, whatever, you know, your geographical, you know, location calls, you know, like an all high school team or whatever the case may be. But yeah, if that's their floor, then they can only go up from here. It's just, it's definitely something I'll be keeping a close eye on, because like you said, they do have some guys who are, you know, CSFL greats all time, you know, inducted Spencer Grudenfelder into the CSFL Hub Hall of Fame last year. He's one of the best wide receivers the league's ever seen. Rob Pulanulo, who I mentioned time and time again, he's in my like top five quarterbacks in league history. And statistically, he's up there, you know, and same thing with Eddie and Todd and Mike, every metric you want to use to quantify quarterback success, Rob, you know, has done it, been there, done that type of deal. And they have got, like, Will, you know, ultimately he'll go down as one of the most like explosive skill players in league history. You know, he might not have the all time rushing yards, might not have the all time receiving yards, but when you go like all purpose yards, you know, you add in kick returns and punt returns, that type of deal, like a Ravon Floyd Bennett, who I played with. When you go that all purpose route in terms of trying to, you know, quantify his talent, he's going to be one of the most productive all-purpose guys in league history. And, you know, like we said, he's missing about, you know, four or five more games on his career because he ultimately got hurt very, very early in his senior season. So, yeah, if that's their floor, you know, they can only go up from there. So that's definitely something I'll be interested in. They do have some good seniors there. Matthew LeBook, I believe is how you pronounce his last name. He should be a senior. He's their, you know, top-notch, you know, nose guard, three tech. You know, I anticipate him having a great, great year. You know, he should be a front runner for, you know, first team all CSFL, even, you know, some of our, you know, awards, you know, he might be up there with the CSFL Hub, first team or second team, things like that. So, you know, it should be a bounce back year. I'm not sure what their record will end up as, because like you said, now Caldwell's up there, you know, Army's retooled, they're ready to go. Mansfield had a very successful year last year. You know, I'm sure they're not trying to take any steps backwards. You know, ultimately they played Army at the end of the season for a chance to go to the CSFL title game. Oh, which in the first half was a very close game. They just lost it towards the end. I think halftime last year, that game was 10-7. So, you know, I think they did show their punching power. I think that was definitely the best year Mansfield's ever had in their program. So, you know, that's another team I'll be, you know, interested to see what they do. And I think, you know, across the league this season, you know, ultimately, you know, you gave your answer what you think Pinoli's going to do with Penn. But I think the big question for every team this year in the league is going to be quarterback play. You know, whether it's a guy there now who just is waiting for the league to start so he can show what he can do, or they really don't know and it's going to be a true quarterback battle. Every single team in the league has like a question in terms of, like I said, it's either going to be a new guy. Most of the teams, it's going to be a guy who's never started. And maybe even about half of the teams, it'll probably be a freshman or, you know, a first year player if it's a sophomore or a junior transfer. So I think that's going to be a thing to keep an eye on across the league. You know, Caldwell, you know, they had some guys play again against Stack, but Steven Yost is going. He was a senior. And Frank DeMio, who, you know, had some really, really big plays in that game. He was a converted wide receiver. So he has one game of quarterback under his belt. Like you said, you know, former teammate at Penn, this will be his first year starting. Army has J.C. Watson, who should go into that starting role. He started during the fall game when Army played Navy. But he's, you know, unproven talent. He'll have to prove he can be the type of guy who Keegan West was or Javier Susantita was. Or is he just a bridge guy until another guy gets in there? I have no idea who's going to start for Navy, to be quite frank. And even, you know, the last couple of guys like a Braden Schmiel or a Jake Foss, I don't got to tell you, they're very, very run heavy. You know, not the most sophisticated passers of the football. So we'll need to see if they're going to have just a running back playing quarterback again. Chestnut Hill is going to be in for a quarterback competition. You know, they have Carmen DeMio, who is the backup to Mike Marino in 2019 season. But again, if it's him, it'll be his first year starting. St. Thomas Aquinas has, you know, Keel McKenzie, who I was very, very high on. I thought he might, in fact, be the best quarterback in the league. But when they played Caldwell, he, you know, did not perform very well at all. He turned the ball over actually twice. So he might not be the long-term answer there. They had a young freshman. His first name is slipping my rhyme right now. But he actually ended up with more passing yards and more big plays in that game against Caldwell. So that's probably a quarterback competition there. Again, Cornell, Nesh Agarwal has moved on, so they'll have a first-time starting quarterback. They do have some transfers I saw on the roster, some sophomore, junior transfers. I'm not sure what their football background is. But again, first-time starter there. Who else are we missing? Alderson Brodus has, you know, Joshua DeRozier returning and Timothy Turner. Those were the two freshmen who split time in 2019. But again, did they get any better? Are they going to continue to split time? Is one going to prove to be better than the other? Is one going to transition into a backup role? Is it going to be a pocket passer, athlete type of deal where they keep splitting time? Joshua DeRozier also plays baseball for Alderson Brodus too. So he's a, you know, very, very impeccable athlete to do that. So every single team in the league this year has a quarterback question. And you know how important the quarterback position is. Might be the most important position in sport. So I think that'll be something we definitely got to keep an eye on as the season goes on. You know, do you have any thoughts about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think, like you said, it's just tons of unproven talent at QB around the league. And obviously a big factor of that is that, you know, because of the canceled season, there more or less are two freshman classes for every team. I mean, obviously the rising sophomores didn't have a season outside of maybe one game, depending on what school you went to. Like the Army-Navy kids got to play a single game. But yeah, when more or less half of your team is rookies, it obviously facilitates a lower quality of proven talent, well, across the league, but especially at that one position. I do think Watson of Army is pretty dangerous. I remember, you know, watching that live stream of the Penn Army 2019 game when Army won that one by 3 points. And I just remember thinking Army was so much more dangerous when Watson was in the game. They were really a threat to run, you know, those triple option zone read, those kind of plays where QBs can run compared to Sullivan when he was just not the same threat, you know, on the ground. So
yeah, at all.
I remember thinking it was a blessing every time Sullivan was in the game for a drive, honestly, from a Penn standpoint. So I think Watson's dangerous. And again, I do really like Paolini. You got to think, just a thrower and a runner, just even from a very brief exposure from the 2019 alumni game, I thought he was pretty impressive player. And, you know, in a few weeks when the 2021 alumni game is finished, I'll have a little bit more insight because I should have played against some more at that point.
Oh, yeah, you'll definitely have to shoot me a text, give me a call after that.
Yeah, you should come through, honestly, if you live nearby Franklin Field. I know the date is September 11th, you know, noon start, so if you want to come through, you know, scout a little bit, I'll be there.
Oh, September 11th, you said?
Yeah, Saturday the 11th.
I might have to take you up on that. If I don't have a game at LaSalle, I might actually slide by. But good, keep going. We'll talk about that later.
Time, obviously, a lot of our generation should be suiting up for the alumni squad, so it should be fun.
Yeah, no, I might have to take you up on that. I'll definitely see if I can make it out to that. But, yeah, like you said, definitely keep an eye on that. You know, us being insiders in the league, you know, keeping track of all this type of stuff is definitely going to be, you know, something that is going to be, you know, fun to watch. You know, I definitely, you know, and I know you do enjoy covering the league. I'm, you know, going to continue to try and make games out. You know, the one thing that'll be a benefit, you know, coaching, you know, freshmen this year and JV, most of the games I'll be coaching are usually, like, right after school on, like, weekdays. We have, like, one or two weekend games. We just got our schedule. So, and the two weekend games we have, you know, are, like, 10 in the morning. You know, and, you know, most CFL games, you know, night games, even on Saturdays. If they're not night games on Saturdays, they're, like, afternoon games. So, you know, I'm definitely going to try. I'm trying to set it up to where, like, I could get maybe, like, Caldwell versus Chestnut Hill or then, like, Army versus Penn. You know, not keeping track of the exact schedules in my head. I'm just throwing names out there. But, like, I definitely want to go to a game at Franklin Field. Definitely want to go to a Chestnut Hill game because those are the two closest in Philly. I want to get to a home game at Caldwell because, you know, it's just that 2 hours away. And just figure it out that way. Alderson Brodus was actually gracious enough to invite me to a game during the 2019 season. Unfortunately, I couldn't go. But I do want to make a trip down there to West Virginia, see if I can get to that. So I'm just going to figure out how to get around, you know, show my face, you know, make sure we can get to these games and cover them. And then, of course, the championship game. You know, I know this past season it would have been at Mansfield. I don't know if the venue has changed or not. So I'm anticipating the championship game being at Mansfield again like it was supposed to last year. We just didn't have a season. So, you know, I'll definitely be able to come to that. You know, if you don't have anything to do whenever that is, you know, I know it would be great, you know, if you could come to that as well. We could definitely meet each other in person and chat some ball, you know, see the title game, whoever's in it. But to close it out, you know, one of the biggest announcements, you know, related to spring football was that starting in the 2022 season will be the inaugural season of the MSFL, which is the Midwest Sprint Football League. So we have, you know, spring football moving farther and farther west, farther and farther south, you know, with the introduction out in Brodus. But how do you think that'll go for the bold for the league and bold for, you know, the recognition of the sport?
I think it's awesome. I think more national exposure is never going to be a bad thing. And I'll say I was pretty stunned about it when I saw the news. Like, I don't know, maybe you have stronger connections than I do, and you sort of had an inkling it was coming. But at least from my end, it kind of came out of nowhere. I was stunned, and I was pretty happy to see it, because obviously Sprint football sort of has this, you know, at least currently has this niche, you know, existence in the Northeast U.S. where nobody outside that area has heard of it, and even most people in there haven't really heard of it. If the people even on our campuses, Penn and Chestnut Hill, they probably hear about it. They think it's like, either they think it's like flag football, or they think it's arena football style where guys are just flying around before the ball's even snapped, you know, behind line of scrimmage. Like, I mean, obviously people don't really know much about the sport, broadly speaking. And I think more schools having the sport, you know, at the varsity level is only going to help that. And I think what's really exciting is that hopefully we'll get to a point where those new programs in the Midwest grow a bit and get more classes of recruited players, and we could combine the leagues, you know, maybe do some type of championship game where the Northeast League winner plays a Midwest League winner, you know, some type of neutral site. I think that'd be an awesome thing years down the road. And, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, like I said, you know, more schools having the sport is only a good thing. And if it does lead to even further expansion with, you know, the sport going further west to the West Coast, I think that'd be awesome. You know, I think, you know, the sport being on the rise is a very rewarding thing to see, because it has such a niche thing as of now, and to see it grow from where we were. And like when we played, it was only 8, 9, or 10 teams. To see it grow from there is going to be awesome.
Yeah, no, I agree with you, brother. I think that it's, you know, probably the most exciting thing to happen to the league since the division system, which, you know, amongst the league, it was exciting. You know, having the North and the South, but this is definitely the, you know, the most groundbreaking thing that happened to the league, you know, in decades, honestly. You know, some of the schools, you know, they're all pretty much located, you know, Midwest, you know, hence the name. It's St. Mary of the Woods College, Quincy University, Camulet College of St. Joseph, Belmare College, Midwest University, and Fompon University. I think three of those six I just named are in Kentucky. So that'll be like a Chestnut Hill Penn type of deal where, you know, they're fighting for like state dominance, city dominance. I don't think they're all in the same city, but I know all three of those six are in Kentucky. I'm not sure how close they are together. But, you know, I've actually had the opportunity to talk to some of the coaches, reached out to them, you know, wished them, you know, success in recruiting, and, you know, just expressed how excited I was for them to get started. You know, I've talked to one of the athletic directors as well. Same thing, you know, let him know how excited I was for them to get started. And I definitely agree with you. It's going to bode well for the league in its entirety and just the sport in its entirety. You know, about 2 years ago, I did a couple podcast runs where I was on some other podcasts, you know, just providing some education about the sport, you know, highlighting some of the caliber of athletes that the league gets. And just so that, like, the world knows, is like, you know, most of these kids, like we mentioned earlier, are like all Catholic, or like all state, or all city, or all suburb. Some of the kids who aren't, you know, like myself, like, you know, one of your teammates, you know, Tom Console, who I've had the pleasure of speaking to, you know, he went to St. Joe's Prep, for those of you who don't know, which is, you know, one of the most prestigious football powerhouses in the United States. So, you know, he got kind of caught behind some guys who are, you know, one of whom is now in the NFL and DeAndre Swift, but some other guys who, you know, play D2 and D3 at other places. And for him to go, you know, to Penn and then turn into one of the most dominant safeties over a 4-year stretch in league history. You know, somebody like myself who played receiver in high school to come to Chestnut Hill and switch to the other side of the ball and, you know, do the things I did. It's a testament to, you know, that all those type of guys can share the field together, whether you're, you know, you're a former all state runner up or a guy who was just fighting for touches, to be able to share the field together and both be able to be impact players for their team. You know, is the beauty of sprint football, you know, and it just so happens, you know, we're 5'8". You know, I'm 5'8". I'm sure you're around the same height, too. You know, it's not a testament to your lack of athleticism. It's not a testament to these lack of guys' athleticism. It's definitely not a testament to their skill level, because, like you said, I played with dudes who are all state. I know you have. I played with dudes who are all suburb, all county, all shore. You know, they just ended up at Chestnut Hill, whether it was their choice or for whatever, you know, life led them down this specific path. So I think the league going to the West, well, a new league, you know, forming in the West, we're going to see a lot of the same things. And like we mentioned, you know, some of these, you know, recruiting hotspots like Pennsylvania, New Jersey, you know, the Midwest is a recruiting hotspot, to say the least, in terms of, you know, just skill players, you know, might not be able to, you know, generate some of the size, but that's the beauty of sprint football. You're just looking for guys who maybe have some experience in O-line, or guys you can turn into O-linemen. But I have no doubt in my mind they'll be able to field skill players. You know what I mean? Like running backs and receivers and DBs. Those type of states, you know, field some of the fastest people in the nation when you look at track times. You know, another great, you know, metric to, you know, quantify how fast guys are. You know, places like Kentucky, you know, Louisiana, you know, going west and, you know, west towards the south. Those are some of the fastest states in the nation when you look at track. So I have no doubt in my mind they'll be able to field phenomenal football talent, you know, as well, particularly at the skill position. So, yeah, it definitely is exciting. I want to eventually, you know, make my way out there, you know, next season, you know, when they do have a season. And like you said, you know, maybe about 3 or 4 years down the line, we could get some cross play. You know, you hit the nail on the head earlier with, like, you know, referencing Chestnut Hill early on, Alderson, Brodus, and Caldwell. You got to build that, you know, maturation process. You know, they wouldn't, you know, probably be able to compete with some of the teams in, you know, our North and South division in their first year. I don't think there's any word of cross play in the first year anyway. Definitely probably not in the second year. Maybe their third year, they'd be able, you know, to be comparable to maybe some of the North or the South midway of the pack teams. But after that fourth and fifth year, maybe, I think that's when the talk will start. You know, do we have a title game? Do you know maybe a few teams want to do cross play in terms of a regular season game? Because, you know, there was one rule that's instituted in the league this year that I don't think any team took, you know, up on the offer. But it was, you know, it was on the CSFL page in terms of like the post-league meetings that the teams could add another game if they wanted to this year in terms of like an out-of-conference opponent. In terms of, you know, Army traditionally played some schools' JV teams. You know, Navy used to as well. The most recent one was Mansfield a few years ago. They played it was either St. Francis University or Sacred Heart University's club team, and they thrashed them. I think that was 2018, maybe our senior year. They did that. So that was out there for teams this year. And based on the schedules, I don't think any team took it up this year. Granted, you know, it's post-COVID or still technically COVID. So, I, you know, if someone did entertain the idea, it might have been that they couldn't find an opponent. But if that league, if that rule stays in place, I think this will be the perfect opportunity to make that rule useful, you know? Say, you know, say Penn wants to play Quincy University, you know, in 2023, you know? Maybe we start getting those deals where you playing games, you know, a couple years out, you know, where, you know, Clemson's going to play Alabama at, you know, Death Valley in 2032, shit like that, where, you know, we start building for that time, you know, maybe Chestnut Hill plays Fontbonne in 2029, things like that. So it'll definitely be, you know, good conversation to have over the next few years. They won't be doing, you know, any activity this year other than recruiting, you know. Much like Alderson Brodus and, you know, the three SCS teams and you guys, Cornell, Army and Navy. I believe Quincy also has a NCAA team. And I think one of the other schools does too. It might be Midway University, I want to say, but I know Quincy does for sure. I actually follow them on Twitter and I saw their, big boys just got started with camp. So that'll be another interesting team. If they can pull, you know, some of their guys down, or recruit some of their guys in, you know, maybe in anticipation of maybe some of them going up, you know, whatever the case may be. So that'll be something to watch as the years go on. But I think you hit the nail on the head. You know, it's definitely exciting to see the, you know, Midwest Sprint Football League get started in a few years. So on that note, I think, you know, I think we got some good conversation in. Again, I just want to thank you, Cole, for, you know, all you do for the Hub. You know, you're, again, not to toot your horn, but, you know, you're a fantastic writer. You know, having to, even though we both played defense, you know, we shared the field at one point in time in our career. So, you know, it was great being able to play your Penn teams. And, you know, everything I know about you now as a young man, you know, you're doing great things for yourself, you know, working in your passions, you know, in your fields of study. And I wish you the utmost success with that. And, you know, we're going to make the best of the season. We're going to make it great, man.
Yeah, definitely appreciate everything. I appreciate all you do for the website and giving the league a real media outlet. And, yeah, good luck with, you know, keeping the website going. Good luck at LaSalle. And definitely hope to keep in touch and hope to see you out there on September 11th.
Yeah, no, I'm looking forward to it, man. I'm going to try my darndest to make it out there. So, again, this has been Kyle Johnson Hackett and Cole Jacobson bringing you the CSFL Hub podcast. Looking forward to the season getting started. Next up will be the CSFL Hub Hall of Fame induction, which should be coming out next week. And then not too long after that, we'll get the season rolling. So thank you guys for joining us, and we'll talk to you soon. Peace.